Before the show, a quick word from our sponsor.
What is up, Bitcoiners? It's CK, and I'm here to talk to you about the Bitcoin 2021 conference this June in sunny Miami, Florida. It is going to be June 4th and 5th, and we are barreling towards a sold-out conference. Already one-third of our available tickets have been sold, and way more than half of our whale passes have been sold. We are almost sold out completely on the whale pass. We have amazing speakers, Jack Dorsey, Chamath, Nick Szabo, Tony Hawk, Peter Todd, many, many more, and many more to be announced. You can go to the website to check them all out. Mayor Suarez has welcomed us into the city with open arms. And again, tickets are flying off the shelves. Seriously, I see the feed and like I've done many conferences. This one is really has something going for it. And honestly, guys, like after all this, after 2020, Bitcoiners want to grab a beer, hang out. We're bringing back Bitcoin 2019 vibes times 10, prices times 10. Let's go. Use promo code Satoshi, all caps, Satoshi, for 10% off. You can go to the website b.tc/conference. Again, that is b.tc/conference. And get your ticket today. Today, prices also are going up. And hey, we may just sell out. So we have a hard cap. Can't really be flexible there. Don't wait.
Live from Utrecht, this is the fan William Schorsnedo.
Hello.
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 Hey, who's there?
I don't know. Someone who's never been on the show before.
It's Ruben.
Oh.
Ruben is back.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Ruben, I think you're our in-house sidechain expert.
I guess so.
At this point. Well, I would consider you a, you're a Bitcoin expert, but you're,
hopefully.
It seems like your specialization lies in all sorts of sidechain. Anything sidechain.
Yeah, that seems like it. It just happened to be like that, become like that.
Is that how I'm using the term correctly? That's how I've been using the term. Sidechain is sort of the umbrella term. And
yeah.
Now we have all sorts of different ways of doing it, which have their own names like drive chain or state chain. Or today we're...
It depends. If you're picking on the definition of sidechain, then it's not. Then you would just say other chain or related chain, I guess.
Yeah, but that doesn't really roll off the tongue. I'm a... utter chain experts. Something like, well, not altcoins, I guess.
No, you're not an altcoin expert.
So it's difficult. Yeah, I like, generally speaking, I'm very much interested in trying to get Bitcoin to do more with less. And I think sidechains are a good avenue for reaching that. So that's kind of why I think I spend a lot of time thinking about these things.
Yeah, so you came up with another idea, another type of sidechain then,
yep.
I would call it,
yep.
Which is called a soft chain.
That's right.
And that's what we're going to discuss today.
Yeah, we're going to try and understand it.
Great.
So first of all, for the listeners who haven't listened to one of the previous episodes about sidechains, Ruben, what is a sidechain? Briefly.
Yeah, so a sidechain is basically a completely separate chain, ideally, that you can move your Bitcoins to and you can move your Bitcoins back again. And the dream is kind of that you can build out this ecosystem where your Bitcoins are not necessarily stuck with Bitcoin's validation rules, but if you like Ethereum's validation rules or something, you could maybe move your Bitcoins to some Ethereum-like chain and use them there. And then when you are done again because you figured out that Ethereum is not so great after all, you can move back to Bitcoin. And buying and selling is not quite that at all. And this kind of preserves the 21 million Bitcoin limit where you don't have to deal with all these altcoin shenanigans, yet you still get all the functionality that you might want that is not available in Bitcoin currently.
Yeah.
So that's an argument from experimentation or from more features.
I guess so, yeah.
And your other argument, I guess, would be scale in theory.
Yeah, that's definitely a second argument. Good point. Yeah, if you have all these sidechains, then potentially you could have more block space. You could have multiple sidechains that are just like Bitcoin or maybe slightly different. And yeah, it basically gives you more block space for people to use.
Yeah, so let's say you want to use some sort of DeFi app that's not really compatible with the current Bitcoin protocol. You can move it to a sidechain that has these Ethereum rules and you can do all your DeFi stuff there. And then when you're done, you move back your Bitcoins to the main Bitcoin blockchain.
Yeah, and importantly, that you can do it with your Bitcoins, right? Because we talked about I think I didn't call it space chains back then, but I call it space chains now, which is blind merge mining in a perpetual one-way PAG. Mm-hmm. So that one did not allow you to move your Bitcoins to, well, you could move to the other chain, but you couldn't move back. So this proposal actually allows you to move back. But there are obviously downsides as well, which we'll get into.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about drive chains, which do allow you to move your coins back.
Yeah. And that's also good to kind of point out the difference. So with drive chains, very, you know, high level, the miners basically control the Bitcoins and they decide whether or not you get to move back. And with this proposal, it wouldn't be like that. It would actually be consensus, basically, whether or not you get to move back.
Yeah. So we just gave the DeFi example. Other examples would be like Zcash, sidechain, or like any altcoin that's out there. Basically, you could instead use a sidechain and then therefore use sort of the Bitcoin currency unit.
Yeah.
Under these different rules and conditions.
That's right.
All right. So soft chains, your new, well, is it new? No. When did you propose this?
Yes and no. It's new. I posted it December 31st last year. So not too long ago because we just entered this year. So it was a little New Year's gift, so to speak.
It's your newest one.
It's my newest one, but it's, you know, I'm building forth on work that I did about a year and a half ago on proof of work fraud proofs. So it's not completely new, but the kind of sidechain aspect of it is new.
Right. So yeah, that is the first step in explaining how soft chains work, our proof of work.
Fraud proofs.
Fraud proofs, yeah. Exactly. So let's get into that. And before we get into that, I want to tell the listener, at this point, it's probably easiest if you forget about sidechains for a minute. Mm. Ruben is just going to explain a consensus mechanism. It could potentially work on the Bitcoin main chain as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into it. What are proof of work fraud proofs?
Yeah, so we're taking a bit of a detour here, and we're going to be talking about how you could potentially validate a blockchain such as Bitcoin or other blockchains in a way that is very cheap to validate, essentially. So it's kind of like, you know, one way of doing that would be SPV proofs, or SPV basically means you look at the proof of work and you just assume that whichever chain with the most proof of work, a lot of effort went into creating that chain, so it must be valid. Like, that's one way you can get very cheap consensus, but the general issue with that is that you're trusting that 51% of the miners or more is actually telling you the truth. And if everybody starts relying on that, these miners could actually create coins out of thin air. So it's not very secure, but it would be one way of kind of getting cheap consensus.
Yeah, so the normal way to achieve that is for everyone on the network to control, to validate every protocol rule.
Yes.
To validate that everything that happens in every block is valid.
Yeah.
And then SPV, like you explained, is a much cheaper way to do it because you're not checking everything in every block. You're only checking the proof of work.
Yeah.
And so in episode 25, we actually explained SPV.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Right. And then soft chains are is a method sort of in between.
Well, proof of work fraud proofs, right? That's why we're not talking about the soft chains yet.
Right, you're right.
Yeah,
It's sort of in between full validation and SPV validation in a way.
So if you look at SPV, the assumption is SPV works if 51% of all miners are being honest. Mm-hmm. And with proof of work fraud proofs, what you can do is you can say this validation method works if there is some honest miner out there, and you can choose whatever percentage you like. If you say it's 1%, that's fine. You can go all the way conservative to say 0.01%. But the difference is that what your assumption is affects how slow your validation is.
How you need more confirmations if you want to trust less miners. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. So let's take a simple number like 1%. If you assume that only 1% of all miners is honest and 99% is out there to get you, it basically means that you got to wait for that honest miner to create their block. And if you don't see that block, well, you're not going to see that block until you've given them enough time to actually create that block. So that's why it's a slow consensus mechanism, but it's much more secure than SPV. And you no longer have the 51% assumption.
Yeah. So to restate that, with SPV, with full validation, you don't need to trust any hash power, basically.
Yeah.
With SPV, you need to trust that at least half hash power is honest.
Yeah,
More than half. With proof of work fraud proofs.
Sorry for the name, yeah.
You can sort of pick your own level of trust in hash power, and then depending on that, you need to wait for more confirmations.
Yeah.
I think at least 1% of hash power is going to be honest. So therefore, I'm just going to wait a whole day of confirmations, for example.
Yeah, that's
right. Or maybe 2 days or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does this work?
Yeah, exactly. So the way this works is you only look at the forks. So if you have, normally when you have the Bitcoin blockchain, you download all the headers and then you download all the blocks that are associated with the headers. But what you do here is you start with only the headers and then you look whether there are forks. So maybe you have like block one, block two, block three, four, five. And then somewhere along the line, you see another block three. So block 3B, let's say. So there's 1, 2, 3B and there's 1, 2, 3A, 4, 5. And
I want to make a small clarification for listeners that don't know this, because the term fork is very confusing.
That's true, yeah.
We're not talking about Bcash kind of altcoin forks or anything like that. We're just talking about the normal operation of things in Bitcoin, where sometimes, for example, by coincidence, two competing blocks are mined by different miners, and then eventually the longest chain wins out, right?
Yeah, that's
the type of fork we're talking about here.
Yeah, so
which we mentioned in last week's episode.
Perfect.
You're like an encyclopedia short
episodes.
So basically these are regular, naturally occurring forks that would happen in Bitcoin anyway, just by pure coincidence, or you know, if a miner just happens to mess up or whatever. So these occur naturally. But there are also reasons why they could occur kind of unnaturally, which is that a miner is kind of deliberately trying to create an invalid. And if there's a deliberate attempt to create an invalid block, all the miners that kind of don't want to participate in that invalid chain, they need to fork away from that chain. So given we kind of can...
Do you mean by invalid in this context, do you mean that it's breaking protocol rules?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, for example, the miner is awarding itself 1,000 Bitcoin as a block reward.
Yeah. So basically anything that your full node would reject. If your full node were to download the block and validate the block and they would reject the block, that would be an invalid block.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's possible for miners to create invalid blocks. Then you have a fork, basically. What happens then, Ruben?
Yeah. So that's kind of what you want to check for, right? You want to figure out whether something is invalid. And so this is called proof of work fraud proofs. And the reason for that is maybe it's not the best name. Sure, so you had a suggestion for fraud.
I think it was proof of work fraud indicator.
Fraud indicator, yeah. So I like that. I forgot it again, but yeah, it's good. So fraud indicator, let's say. So that the fact that there's a fork is an indication that the block you're forking away from might be invalid, but you don't know for sure.
May or may not be, yeah.
Yeah. So if we then had a method to validate that specific block, we could actually kind of investigate that claim and see whether or not something is wrong. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that this miner that created the forked block, they did choose to mine the block before it is the same in both forks.
Yeah,
right?
They still agreed that the block that came before it is valid. Everyone, basically, of all the forks you're seeing, everyone agrees that block is valid at least.
Yeah, otherwise they wouldn't have forked from that point. They would have forked earlier.
Right.
So we have two assumptions here. We have the assumption that block might be invalid, and the block before it, all the miners agree that it's valid.
Right.
So with that assumption, now what you need is you need to download block 3 and you need to validate it. But we have a problem because you need the UTXO set to validate the block.
Right, because every block contains transactions which refer back to previous transactions. And those previous transactions, well, they're not in this block. So either you have to download all the other blocks, or you need to keep track of, you know, which coins currently exist. And that is the UTXO set.
Yeah.
Which we discussed in episode...
Well, in a whole bunch of episodes, but in particular because of where we're going in episode 15, where we explain U3XO and UTXO commitments.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, U3XO, which is definitely an episode I think you should go back and listen to, but U3XO basically gives you a solution to validate blocks without having the entire UTXO set. You just need a hash, and then you need some proofs that are attached to the hash, and that allows you to validate a transition. So in this case, from block 2 to block 3, we can validate that transition. So what you need inside of block 2, inside of consensus, is a hash to the U3XO state. And with that state, which you assume is valid because we're assuming block 2 is valid, you can then validate the transition from block 2 to block 3 without requiring the entire UTXO set. And that's how we achieve basically what we want, which is validating block 3 and figuring out whether the most proof of work chain is valid or not.
Yeah, so the reason that's much lighter than full validation is because you're not downloading all the blocks. You're only looking for potential conflicts where they exist, and that's the only thing you check.
Yeah.
Well, plus the block headers, the proof of work for all blocks.
Yeah, so it's basically every block for which there is another block at the same block height,
mm-hmm.
you need to go and check the block inside of the most proof of work chain.
Right.
And if you're bored, you can also check, you know, a random other block as a spot check. Although for this mechanism, that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't think it would do anything here, but it's definitely interesting that it's possible thanks to U-Tree. So if you have these commitments.
Yeah, so the interesting thing, there are different ways of doing commitments of the UTXO set in blocks. And U-Tree-XO is a very interesting one because it's not just a commitment that you can, you know, if you have the UTXO set, you can figure out what the U-Tree-XO is. But you could have a different hash as well, but that hash won't be very useful to check the next block. And with U3XO, it is useful to check the next block because it's a hash that you can add things to. It's an accumulator.
Yeah.
So I can take the hash of the previous block, add all the transactions to it, and now I have the hash of the new block.
Yeah.
And, well, we explained that in episode 15, but not all UTXO commitments will work like this.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, I want to point out right here that this, what you just explained, this is why you potentially only need 1% of honest miners. Now, let's say in this example you just gave, proof of work, fraud proofs, fraud indicators, if 100% of miners is dishonest, then you're never going to find out because there's never going to be a conflicting block. They're always colluding and you're just never going to find out.
Yes.
But if there's even 1% of honest miners, then at some point that one honest miner isn't going to build on the longest proof of work chain because they think it's invalid. They know it's invalid. Instead, they're going to create a conflicting block that's honest. So even if there were like 100 blocks that were dishonest after block one or whatever, and then at some point the honest miner will create an honest block two, at that point you see the conflict and you go check which of the two block twos is valid. If you see that a block two that preceded the 100 block chain with 100 blocks, then you're just going to reject all 100 blocks.
Exactly.
And you're going to continue only honest block number two.
Yeah. So it's important to point out here that the creation of the fork is really not a sacrifice, right? It's not that person who created that fork block and caused the 100 blocks to be rejected. That's just kind of the normal way things should be. Like that person who created the fork block, they get the block reward, whereas everybody else who was building on the invalid chain, they get nothing, right? Because their chain is invalidated.
Right. But it is a little bit risky because at any point, you know, if you're telling the rest of the network, oh, we're about to do a 100 block reorg, you know, or maybe 1,000 or whatever it is, at some point the rest of the network might say, well, although you're right, like it's not worth the damage that this reorg does. But we don't want to get too far ahead of our discussion section. But
well, we can get into this now. Maybe
that's
easier.
I think it's a good moment.
Yeah, a lot of people might say, well, I just sold my car for these coins, or I just, you know, I just accepted rent or whatever. Yeah. The chain turned out to be invalid, but let's just forget about it. Let's just continue on this chain because I don't want to lose all this money I received.
Yeah. So
that's sort of possible. That's sort of complicated incentive thing going on there, game theory thing.
Now, of course, if you're receiving money on one of those soft chains or whatever thing is built on top of this mechanism, if you're the one receiving coins on it, you probably want to do full validation of that particular chain.
Yeah.
So at least you know that there's a problem. But then you could still have the opposite where you can see that there's cheating going on, but you may have to wait a whole year for any miner to agree with you on the fact that there's cheating going on because all the other people are not validating. You're the only one validating.
Yeah. So the people who are not validating, not fully validating, but only basically doing the proof of work fraud proof validation, they have an assumption to make, right? Like they have to assume that there is a honest miner out there. And they have to, because of that assumption, they have to slow down how long they wait. So if you receive money for a car and you use this consensus mechanism and you don't wait for the proper number of blocks, that is just the wrong behavior, basically. That's not what you're supposed to do. So that's basically outside of the trust assumption of this model. But if your assumption is wrong, right, if you just assume 1% of all miners is honest and that's actually a wrong assumption, then you are screwed. So that's definitely, you got to make a conservative choice there. And for that reason, this consensus mechanism isn't very practical instead of a full node. Like you could theoretically run this on your phone or something, right?
So ironically, this reverses the risks when compared to how Bitcoin works. with when it comes to light nodes. So if on Bitcoin you're running an SPV node, but you see that if you're running the SPV node, you might be cheated because you're only checking the proof of work. But the whoever runs the full node knows, you know, exactly what's going on. But here it could be the opposite. You could be running a full node, you could be verifying everything very carefully, but you just don't get all the headers for some reason. And so, yeah, you might not know that somebody else is out there lying, basically. You'd have to not see a very long chain of headers, but...
Well, if they're invalid headers, presumably none of your peers are going to tell you about it because they're invalid. So maybe it's possible to not be aware.
Right. Yeah, I guess you'd still be following the valid chain, but you might not know that there's an invalid chain out there. Yeah, because you might only be talking to other full nodes.
Yeah.
So you don't know that the rest of the network is kind of trusting on an invalid chain and shit is about to hit the fan. Although you have the correct chain, it may take a while for the rest of the network to agree on that because there's an invalid chain out there that you don't know about. Though I guess you would know about it.
Yeah, I think arguably it might be just good in general to give all valid proof of work headers to all the full nodes, regardless of whether or not they're in the most proof of work chain, just as an indicator of whether something is wrong. But yeah, that's kind of a separate discussion.
Yeah.
So we've explained this consensus mechanism in general terms.
Yeah.
So how do we apply this as a sidechain?
Yeah.
That would be the next step, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So now we have this consensus mechanism, which you could theoretically apply to Bitcoin and you could have consensus this way, but just very slowly.
Plus it would require U3XO or something like that.
So yeah.
Which doesn't exist. But, you know, we create a sidechain. It's easy to just implemented there.
Yeah, I have a method of actually not even requiring a U3XO commitment, but let's not go into that. But there's a post out there if you're interested in that.
But it is good to realize that the U3XO and the commitments, you know, they are a bit of a controversial idea.
Yeah.
But in this case, they wouldn't have to happen on the Bitcoin side. They'd have to happen on the sidechain side. And so maybe we'd be fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So what we're doing here is we're using this consensus mechanism for the sidechains or soft chains, as I call them, that we're going to be introducing. So on the side of the soft chains, you need to have these U3XO set commitments, but not inside of the Bitcoin blockchain. Yep. So that's not something that we require for Bitcoin here.
But you do need some soft fork on the Bitcoin
side. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Tell us.
Yeah. So the way it works is we are going to introduce a soft fork, and let's say we just start very simply. Let's say we want to create 10 more copies of Bitcoin. We use Bitcoin Core for it, exactly the same. So we kind of want to create a kind of a side chain block size increase, so to speak. So we create these 10 chains, and they will have no coins on them, and there's going to be no block reward or no coins being generated every block. But people can move their coins in. And moving their coins in is going to be very simple. It's just you freeze your coins on the Bitcoin blockchain and you point to a chain that you want to go to. And then what we do is we expect everybody who runs a Bitcoin full node to validate these 10 other soft chains, but they validate them through these proof of work fraud proofs. And roughly speaking...
Fraud indicators.
Yeah, that's a better name. And roughly... looking at the Bitcoin blockchain and its history and looking at kind of just natural forks occurring by accident, this comes down to, I think it was roughly, I don't remember the exact numbers, but something like 40 blocks a year. That's probably even on the high end. And roughly this would cost you, including the headers, 100 megabytes per chain per year.
What you mean is 40 fork blocks basically, right?
Yes.
So yeah. 40 times where you'd have to check
exactly if
anything weird is going on.
Yeah. And that's with, non-malicious. Nobody on purpose, well, presumably. I guess we don't know what the reason was for these forks.
Sure.
Yeah. So given roughly those numbers, we can introduce those 10 chains and we can get everybody to validate them with proof-of-work fraud proofs. And it would cost them 10 times 100 megabytes per year. So roughly 1 gigabyte. And if we thought that was a burden on these new, on the full nodes, we could even combine this with a block size decrease. I think 1 gigabyte is only like -1% or something. So we could decrease the Bitcoin block size by 1% to compensate for the extra cost. And then we basically introduce these 10 chains. And it's important to note, and this is something that some people I've explained this to have gotten confused about, you completely separately validate the headers. So you just have to get the headers from the peer-to-peer network, from these proof of work, from these soft chains. So they're not going to be committed inside of the Bitcoin blockchain or anything like that.
It is essentially like you're running 11 nodes.
Yes.
So your main Bitcoin node does full validation, and then you have 10 Bitcoin sidechain nodes, built in, of course, that are doing this partial validation by just doing the headers and just checking conflicts.
Yeah, that's right. And then what we do is we make the pegouts incredibly slow. We make them like a one year period. So the pegout meaning you moved your coins to the soft chain and now you want to move back. Mm-hmm. So moving back is going to take a year. And the reason we do that is because we don't want to rely too much on miners. And if we wait a year, I don't know what it works out to, but it's like 0.01% or something. Like somebody out there within a year has to create a fork when an invalid block occurs that is specifically trying to peg out something that's invalid.
So a peg out on the main chain, that of course is a soft fork, right? Because it's probably, from old nodes point of view, an address that anybody can spend from.
Yeah.
Coins go in there. Those coins belong to the sidechain.
Yeah.
And for old nodes, anybody can just take that money. But for these new nodes, there are constraints.
Yeah.
But what exactly is that constraint? Some sort of block they have to refer to a block hash on one of the sidechains?
Yeah. So this is not completely worked out, because I think you go into the weeds, and I think those design decisions kind of need to come later.
Well, but roughly a block hash, because then you could say, well, if that block hash is orked out or like in an invalid block, because we checked all those conflicts, we're not going to accept the peg out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you definitely have to. So if you want to peg out on the Bitcoin blockchain, you say, hey, I want to. So you're not even spending the UTXO yet. You're just saying like 1 year from now, I want to take some coins out of this UTXO. And you point to a specific soft chain block, which also contains your peg out transaction that you want to be referring to. And then from that moment, inside of Bitcoin consensus, you wait 1 year worth of blocks, however many blocks that is. And then after a year, if that soft chain block that you pointed to is still valid according to proof of work, fraud proof consensus, then you get your peg out.
Yeah. So to make the problem you're solving here very concrete, if I understand correctly, to give one example, is that miners would create an invalid transaction on the sidechain to just pay all the money to themselves.
Yeah.
And then your assumption is, well, there's got to be some miner out there somewhere who's going to actually create a valid alternative.
Yeah.
And at that point, it creates a conflict. And at that point, everyone checks and sees that the valid alternative is not sending all this money to all the miners.
Yeah.
So therefore, the peg out transaction is invalid and won't happen.
Yeah. And to add to that, if there is no block that is forking away from the invalid block, then from the perspective of everybody who's using the soft chain, and it's important to note, if you're actually using the soft chain, you're running it as a full node. So you opt into it and you actually validate it normally. So then from their perspective, the chain is not moving forward because it's just a big chain of invalid blocks. So all their transactions are stuck. So there's basically, you know, huge fee pressure of saying like, hey, build the next block, please, because everything you're building is invalid. You know, from that perspective, I think it's incredibly unlikely that within a year, there is not going to be a block that is going to indicate that that entire chain was actually invalid.
But this is where I start getting really scared. And you're also going to get really scared,
because
you already gave some examples, but I'm going to give another one, which is that this is a fraud indicator, as you said. It's not really a proof. And I guess the difference here would be a proof would be something committed to the blockchain that really says, okay, this is the real thing and this is the evidence that this thing is wrong. And there's problems with that concept, but at least everybody would have access to that proof at the same time. And with this fraud indicator, you're really hoping that all the Bitcoin full nodes are aware that this particular pegout is invalid. So all of them have seen this alternative header chain, have seen this header fork, basically.
Yeah.
Because if one doesn't, then they might think, oh, it's perfectly valid. And so you get a consensus disagreement there. And that might still work out if the majority of hash power, at least, because you know, as long as the majority of the Bitcoin miners are doing the correct thing. But if they're not, then things get real messy.
Yeah, worst case scenario, which I think is kind of an unlikely scenario, right? That you don't learn about a certain... It is very similar to how in Bitcoin, you're assuming that you learn about the most proof-of-work chain. And if nobody tells you about the most proof-of-work chain, then you might get stuck on some fork and you don't see the chain move forward anymore or something like that. Theoretically, I guess that could happen on one of these soft chains. I think it's unlikely, but let's say it did, then that one node or those couple of nodes that are in that situation, they could theoretically fork away from Bitcoin, and they would consider some, well, yeah, I guess it would be a scenario where they think a certain pegout was invalid because they didn't learn about it or something.
No, it'd be the other way around. So I think it wouldn't be too bad because if there is a pegout that is not valid, but you have not seen the real chain, then you don't know that it's not valid, but that's okay because you still think, you think it's valid.
Yeah, but it's not being spent basically then.
So I think you'd be fine in terms of the soft fork dynamics there.
So maybe
we should move on to the example you talked about, which is now let's do some funny things with consensus.
Yeah. So there are problems with this, which you haven't talked about yet. And let's get into that.
Yeah, let's get into it. Okay. Ruben, you're the expert.
Yeah. So the problem so far that I've identified, and I guess I'll start with saying that at its current, they're not terrible, but I think they are bad enough for it to not really be a great idea for Bitcoin yet. Like really, if we can't mitigate these issues sufficiently, I don't think this is something that should currently be activated in Bitcoin.
Right. So you're against your own proposal.
I am basically against my own proposal. I think there is some potential there to think it through and maybe mitigate these issues. So I'm hopeful that we can get to a point where it's safer than I think it is, or than I currently think it is.
Right. But, so we're considering this sort of like a first draft.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So why is it a first draft? What's the problem?
So the first issue, and this is one that I think can be mitigated, is that you could have a non-deterministic consensus in one of these soft chains.
You mean like a bug, or is that what you mean or not?
Yeah, it would be a bug. So what I mean by non-deterministic consensus is that you and I run the proof of work, fraud proof, soft chain, the software on a different computer, and somehow the software interprets something differently, and you think a block is invalid, and I think a block is valid. So that would be non-deterministic in the sense that we don't, given the same data, we don't come to the same conclusion.
Right, but that's the same for Bitcoin itself, right?
That's a
problem right now.
Yes. So what I mean here is that, let's say, if you want to do something fancy, like, hey, let's create an Ethereum soft chain.
Right.
Well, then you inherit all of Ethereum's crazy stuff that's in there. And that is not something I would be comfortable with because of this non-deterministic bug potential, which could come back to actually influence Bitcoin main chain. Because let's see how this would occur. Yeah, if there's a transaction, there's a pegout transaction, and the block is in dispute because there's a fork block, and because of this non-deterministic behavior, your node thinks the pegout is valid and my node thinks it's invalid. Then a year goes by and now the pegout, half the network thinks the pegout is spendable, half the network thinks the pegout is not spendable. And now you run into a fork on Bitcoin, actually.
Yeah, so any risk off the sidechain would actually be an equal risk for Bitcoin in this scenario.
Yes.
It wouldn't be some sort of sealed off risk that's the problem of sidechain users.
Yeah.
It would now all of a sudden be everyone's problem.
At the very least, you would see it coming because it would occur before that 1 year period is up. But you know that eventually it's going to happen, and then you need to actually take action to prevent it, which is like at least a soft fork.
So in a way,
this could be the difference between two operating systems, like you said, Windows and Linux, maybe having different interpretation, but it can also be different versions, right? We had Bitcoin Core 0.7 and 0.8, where we, introduced a consensus bug accidentally, which had to be undone.
Yeah.
And now you have 10 different chains, each with their own development team, and they might not be very experienced, and one of those teams makes a single mistake like that.
Yeah.
And boom.
Yeah. So as if consensus isn't hard enough on Bitcoin itself yet, now we're expanding that to potentially less competent teams. And
yeah.
Right. Now you could go back to what you said, the simplest version, which just adds scale, which is having 10 clones of Bitcoin. And maybe even, I think you mentioned in the mailing list, you turn off everything except Taproot and you simplify it, make it as unrisky as possible.
Yeah.
Now that actually brings up two other issues for me.
Mm.
One we haven't talked about yet, I think, but I forgot what it was.
I'll interject and at least say one thing, which is something that Adam Beck pointed out, which is that it's sort of like an extension block. An extension block would be that you have sort of a blockchain inside of a blockchain that everybody validates. So it's sort of the same thing here, where you could have an Ethereum extension block or something like that. The difference just is that it's an extension block that's really cheap to validate for people who only what care about the peg ins and the peg outs, and the people who actually want to use the day to day, they got to go and actually do full validation on it.
Yeah. So I have a couple of them that could be a problem.
Okay.
One is a denial of service attack, where I am a miner and I'm going to create blocks with a very low proof of work, basically. Mm. Well, it depends on when the soft fork is introduced. But if these soft chains have the same proof of work, but it's the lower difficulty,
yeah,
I could create lots of separate chains, presumably that you then all have to validate to figure out which one is wrong. And the other thing you mentioned that I realized, and that was the one I forgot actually, you mentioned that these chains don't have their own block reward.
Yeah.
But then why on earth would you mine them? just for the fees, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so it would be the same as, you know, Bitcoin eventually has to get into that state as well.
But why not give it a block reward and have a nice game of musical chairs?
Well, that would be an altcoin. So then you basically break the 21 million limits by creating these other coins that I guess can't move back into Bitcoin main chain, but they would be...
No, they can, just until the peg runs out.
Until...
So it just becomes more and more fractional.
Oh, yeah, fractional, yeah. That would be great. Fractional chain. Well, you know...
But that would translate in a different price, obviously. Yeah. Defeating the point of a sidechain.
Yeah, I think that would be...
Strictly lower price.
Yeah, that would be kind of disastrous. But yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. You run into the problem that Bitcoin will eventually run into sooner, and you sort of have a bootstrapping problem in the sense that when you first start the chain, there's not going to be much in terms of fees on there. So there are a couple of things you can do. I think the first thing you would want to do is be very conservative with how much block space you add. So you don't want to start and just create 10 chains right away. You want to start maybe with one chain or something like that, or you could have like one chain activate every year, or I don't know, something along those lines. And the other thing you want to do is make sure that there's enough proof of work, because yeah, like Shor's pointing out, if the proof of work is really cheap, every time a fork is created and it could then potentially be created really, really cheaply, every full node has to do more work. They have to download another block and they have to check the UTXO proofs. It's roughly 3 megabytes. So yeah, that would not be ideal. So either you would want there to be some kind of minimum where you say, mm-hmm. well, a block needs to at least have 10% of Bitcoin's proof of work or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Or, and I don't know if we want to get into that now, I guess we should, you could do merged mining.
Right, because the other thing with proof of work before we get to merged mining is, If all these things are clones of Bitcoin Core and they all use SHA-256, now you have these giant ASIC miners that can pick if they want to mine the main chain, some shitcoin clone, or one of these 10 alternative chains. And because they could overwhelm any of these alternative chains, they could do all sorts of shenanigans where the whole game theory, I think, is not clear in advance. Yeah. Generally, it's very bad when two coins have the same proof of work algorithm. The big coin can really bully the small coin, reorg it out of existence, mess with the difficulty, do all sorts of shenanigans, and now we can, we would do that times 10.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Yeah, I guess a minimum proof of work could at least make that more difficult.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to design consensus rules to compare difficulties and.
There are some complexities there, which I agree are not ideal, but I do think they're solvable. But yeah, we are getting into the territory of where you're starting to create fixes for little problems in ways that are not really
I think
elegant.
Where this will go, and I think I mentioned this before in another episode where we said like there's some implementation details to work out.
Yeah.
But why do implementation details matter? Because I think once you think about them, you will end up with just bigger blocks. That's sort of where you, as you know, after you apply fix after fix for problem after problem, you end up right back where you started with bigger blocks. And then you say, well, we don't want bigger blocks because the problem we had with bigger blocks, and it turns out you can't fix the block size problem.
Yeah, I do think it's not quite like bigger blocks. At the very least, it's a soft fork, not a hard fork. So that's a win. And I think the second thing that...
But you can make bigger blocks with a soft fork.
I guess you could if you made it an extension block. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. That's true. Yeah. So I guess to your proof of work points, just briefly to point out, you could choose to have different proof of work on these different chains. So that could be one way of doing it, but that would, I think that would also be a little messy.
And that, that opens multiple cans of worms, right?
Yeah.
It opens the cans of worms that other coins have when they come up with a new proof of work oops, there's an ASIC or oops, there's no ASIC. And or you're competing with some altcoin that you didn't know about.
Yeah.
But also this proof of work is again another consensus thing that could have bugs in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's also in terms of, you know, I'm very a slight tangent, I guess, but like every time a new coin is created, you don't know if the creators secretly have an optimization for whatever they chose for their proof of work.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also the symmetry, because some proofs of work are not as nicely symmetrical, asymmetrical, I mean. Some, you know, with Bitcoin, it takes a lot of work to produce the right hash, but it always takes the exact same amount of time to verify the hash.
Yeah.
So the verification is O0, as we say, I think. So it scales with the zero power, so it doesn't scale at all. And then the proof of work scales more than that. But there are other forms of proof of work where it might be actually quite expensive to verify it. So then you create another DOS factor where, in order to verify all these blocks, you need to do very expensive proof of work verification because, oops.
Yeah. I feel like there's one criticism that I haven't addressed.
I think generally speaking, so to get back on track, I think the two main downsides you've mentioned now are the consensus risk if there's a bug in one of the sidechains, and the potentially low proof of work security of the sidechains.
Yeah.
And then the third one...
Well, there's one more thing we should get into about the low proof of work, which is merge mining. So that's one potential way of solving it. Now I remember what I was going to address, which was the claim of whether or not this isn't just like a block size increase. So if you do merge mining, what you could do is you could say, well, every softchain block just requires the same amount of proof of work as a Bitcoin block. And what that means is that every Bitcoin miner has to also merge mine the softchain. And this makes it more difficult for miners, which is a real downside, which I'm not happy with. But it would mean that everyone who wants to be a Bitcoin miner also has to be a miner for every softchain. So they would, if we were to introduce 10 softchains, that would mean they have to run another 10 full nodes to get all the fees and to create adequate proof of work. So
and do they have to create a block every time, or can they opt out of creating? I guess they can opt out of some of the chains, right?
Yeah.
But they lose out on revenue.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be, that's kind of always the tricky thing with merge mining. You're sort of obligated to merge mine because you're not going to be competitive if you don't do it.
Right. And we talked about that in the episode about drive chains, where if you're a miner on the moon behind a Tor node, it's not fun if you have to download other chains as well.
Yeah.
And especially if those other chains also have super complicated smart contract validation rules and send you terabytes of data.
And I guess it's worth mentioning that something like blind merge mining doesn't actually work for this. And there's an important reason for that, which is that you need forks to be outside of Bitcoin consensus. And with blind merge mining, your consensus of your other chain is inside of the Bitcoin chain, which means that whoever is the Bitcoin miner can choose never to allow you to create the fork in the first place. So blind merge mining is off the table here.
Yeah. Okay.
Third problem.
Oh yeah, no, just one more thing I wanted to address, which is, so in this scenario, the miners would have to do more work, but it's still the case that everybody who runs a regular full node and these softchain full nodes or softchain nodes, they would not have to do 10 times the work. They would just have the same amount of work that they're doing today. And optionally, if they want to opt into one of these soft chains, then they have to validate that specific chain. So I think it's still a win in that regard, where, you know, maybe you would have two chains that you validate per person, and the other 8 or 9 chains you don't care about.
Well, at least, yeah, I guess other way to put it, if you're running a regular node, you verify what you care about.
Yeah.
Right? Plus a little bit of work for the other chains.
That's right.
With all the caveats that we talked about, denial of service attacks, that make you verify all the things.
Yeah.
Okay. Times.
I think it's time for problem number 3.
That's right.
Was there a third problem?
There was, yeah. So the third problem is also sort of related to the low proof of work, which is that you could have a scenario where there is a 1-year reorg on a soft chain. And if that's the case, and if this 1-year reorg...
That basically means 99.999% of miners are dishonest or something like that.
Yeah, or 200%, like depending on how you want to look at it. Like you have a chain and then suddenly a new chain appears.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. and it doesn't even have to be invalid. These could be two valid chains. The thing is that 1 year from now, you have to make a decision. Is this pegout valid or is this pegout invalid? And let's say right at the moment where it's about to become valid, then, you know, you say in your note, you say, okay, this pegout is valid, I'm done. And then right at that moment, this other chain appears with a year worth of proof of work, which basically pushes out the pegout transaction.
Oh, it suddenly appears.
It suddenly appears.
Oh, that's a problem.
That's a problem, yeah. And now that pegout transaction that you thought was valid is not valid. And if this happens right at that moment, right at the year cutoff, then half the network might think it's valid, half the network might think it's invalid. And now we're back to the fork so issue.
This reminds me of something that happened to Bitcoin Cash.
Because
they were doing a bunch of hard forks and they had very low proof of work. And then they had a little bit of a fight with Bitcoin SV. And, you know, they were threatening to reorg each other.
Yep.
And basically, if you have two tiny, tiny coins in this case, and you start reorging one of them, well, yeah, in general, if you have a tiny coin and somebody threatens to reorg you, you might get a reorg of 10 or 20 blocks or something like that. And so rather than just accepting that, which means you just have to wait more confirmations, the Bitcoin Cash folks said, no. If your node sees a reorg of more than 10, it will ignore it.
Yeah.
And this is very bad, because what happens now is that, let's say you are running continuously, your node is constantly on. It sees a bunch of block coming in, and then it sees a 20 block reorg. And so it ignores it. But then, and then it might stop, because that 20 block reorg might actually be the chain that's continuing. So your node will just stop suddenly.
Yeah.
But if you're a new node and you're starting up, you're just looking at which is the longest right now, and you're going to follow that.
Yeah.
So it means that the state of your node depends on how long it's been online.
Yeah.
And if somebody games it and creates reorgs that are exactly 10 blocks long,
yep,
you know, just creates them secretly and then sends them over the network, it just knows that because of the difference in timing, it's going to knock half the nodes out. And
yep.
And or you can steal coins that way, of course.
Yeah.
If you can fool an exchange into no longer checking new blocks.
Yep.
Yeah. With the amount of proof of work security on Bcash, someone could do that as a hobby.
I think.
Yes.
I think.
Okay. So that's sort of, yeah. And that's kind of the same problem here.
Yeah. But I totally agree. It's exactly the same problem. And I think just specific to what you mentioned, I think Bitcoin Unlimited does not have that. So if you run an exchange, just go run Bitcoin Unlimited. So you don't have that problem. But yeah, you could literally...
Does that still exist?
That's a good question. Well, maybe this is old information by now.
The code exists somewhere. I guess it exists.
Yeah, maybe it's not being kept up to date. So any recent Bitcoin Core bugs might apply here. But yeah.
Or newly introduced bugs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible too, of course. So really, yeah, it is that same problem where you have this 1 year cutoff and that... If there is a reorg right at that moment, you know, the saving grace here compared to the Bitcoin Cash examples, that's not 10 blocks, it's 1 year. So
yeah,
so that's but that
I
makes
think
it better.
That this
but yeah,
comes back to my point that the difference between a fraud proof that is committed somehow,
yeah,
and so you know what all the reorg rules are versus an indicator, which is depends on when you see things and
yeah,
does not depend on something that's actually in the main blockchain.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But there's like the 1 year reorg, if we were to do merge mining, it would be incredibly unlikely that any miner would succeed in doing that without getting noticed. Because,
yeah, but when it comes to Bitcoin consensus, incredibly unlikely is not good enough.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But yeah, it is definitely, it's a pain point, right? And we can try to mitigate it and we can make it less and less painful, but it stays there. It's there. And I don't think you can get rid of it completely. And there is one more mitigation that I wanted to point out, which is that what you could do is you could actually disallow, just like your example, just like with Bitcoin Cash, you could disallow reorgs of longer than half a year on the soft chain. And what this does is you create the exact same problem as Bitcoin Cash, right? Where if you have a half a year reorg, suddenly you lose consensus. But because you do it after half a year, not after a year, the consensus issue appears on the soft chain first. And then you still have half a year before that issue goes and comes to the main chain. And then you could potentially do a soft fork or something like that to mitigate that issue if it occurs. I don't think this is great because you don't want to rely on soft forks, but I'm just throwing it out there.
So I think we've talked about this long enough.
Yeah.
Let's get to the verdict.
Yeah, I think
I say
mentioned everything.
Let's not do this.
I agree.
Yeah, I think we all agree, or at least I would say it's an interesting concept. It's fairly well thought out, but part of that thinking it out includes concluding that there are some trade-offs that probably make it not worth the risks and the efforts for now.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful that maybe other people who are listening to this come up with some ideas to make it more viable than it is today. I have a little chat room that I actually created for Space Chain. So if people want to join me there and try and think of ways of mitigating that, it's t.me/spacechains. I use it for soft chains as well. I mean, I don't want to create another chat room for every proposal. So that's, you know, if people are interested in that, they can come join me there.
That's on Telegram.
That's on Telegram, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's it, Shores.
Okay, then. Thank you for listening to the Van Weirdom Shoresnado.
There you go.
There you go.